tonight. 72,543 WWE fans sold out this joint. The Link, Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia for WrestleMania Saturday, where Roman Reigns and The Rock beat Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins to ensure the entire Bloodline can help out the Undisputed Champion tonight. It's Bloodline Rules as Roman Reigns defends the title against the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes. Problem is, no one has seen Cody Rhodes all day. He has been locked up in his bus getting ready for the main event tonight. Io Sky won Money in the Bank and cashed in back in August at SummerSlam to win the WWE Women's Championship. Tonight, she battles a former teammate, the winner of the Women's Royal Rumble match, Bayley, who tonight gets her first one-on-one match at WrestleMania. Ladies and gentlemen, the stars are out. Celebrities are in abundance. It's not so chilly in Philly tonight. Welcome to WrestleMania Sunday.
The temperature also had dropped to 49 degrees Fahrenheit by this
point. Fucking Fahrenheit. Fahrenheit cunts.
Fahrenheit cunts.
Fahrenheit is a fucking stupid measurement. It's ridiculous. Of all the things, like, I know that they do everything in America with the kind of old world system. Fahrenheit doesn't make any sense. Every time I saw that on the Saturday night, I'm like, that doesn't, what is freezing? 26 or something. It's like, that doesn't make any sense. Just adopt Celsius. You can have everything else. Have your yards and your gallons and whatever, but Celsius is the way forward.
As I said last week, simple equation. Celsius to Fahrenheit, double it, add 30, mate.
That's not a simple equation, is it? That's a ridiculous thing. Like, that is a joke. So you're saying 1 degree is, what is it? 1 degree is 2. So 1 degree is 32. That is ridiculous.
Not right. Which way, though? Which way is it ridiculous? I mean, you could probably say it both ways, couldn't you?
I just think surely a system where freezing is zero is a good system.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
And 100 is boiling.
Yeah. Like, there we go.
Hello and welcome to the Random Wrestling Review, and it is time for us to cover, that's not right at all, cover WWE WrestleMania XL Night 2, finally, probably a long time past the sell-by date, and everybody would have moved on by the time this comes out, but we don't care, because we've just spent the last 18 months, and then some, doing every single WrestleMania in order, and so we have to finish the damn series today, finish our damn story.
Maybe seamless. Stuff.
And the voice you just heard was, first of all, one of our guests, Stephen Coriander. Stephen, how are you doing?
I am so pumped for this. I'm sat here in a Bret Hart t-shirt from his WCW run, which you can see there, is at least 25 years old, obviously celebrating the best part of his career. I've got a jumbo pack of dude wipes next to me, and my bum has not been cleaner for at least 4 years since I last sat on an electric toilet in Japan. So roll on WrestleMania 40 Night 2.
Do you know that t-shirt? You said it's 25 years old. Brett looks about 25 years on it, or years old on it. He's been airbrushed to fuck.
I mean, look at that. Absolutely gorgeous.
What he looks like Michael Jackson. I mean, it's crazy.
I mean, I'm not sure about that, but...
you know, bad era Michael Jackson when he had the hair, the curly black long hair. Yeah. And also we've got old man Sam Carey. Old man, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, lads. Doing good, lads. Just before we continue on the dude wipes thing, one of my sisters told me a story on the weekend that her and her fiance were in France, and he was like, I got a fucking shit. I got a shit bad. So he went into the toilet and he was like, that's all right, there's some wipes. Lovely old job. Turned out they were cleaning wipes.
Oh.
Probably were bleaching them. So he'd had a bit of drink, so he was a bit like, oh, I'm a bit sore actually down there. And I didn't really think anything of it. They got back and he said to my sister, he was like, can you have a little look? Like, see if I'm doing all right, because I can't, like, see it.
Oh, God.
Just burns all on his asshole.
Oh.
All on his ass cheeks, on the back of his bollocks as well. She had to apply Sudocrem to him.
Wow.
Amazing.
Yeah. To be honest, I had to be topped out there.
Yeah, that's so, it. We may as well pack up and go home.
We can wrap it up. Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, like, I was, first of all, when you said it's got bleach in it, I was like, so he got a free treatment at the same time, you know, lovely stuff. But also it sounds very much like, you know, a nappy rash kind of situation as well, because that's something I've had to do regularly over the last couple of years. So we are WrestleMania XL Sunday, as I said, WrestleMania XL Night 2. And let's start with expectations for the show. And I think what would be very interesting is whether or not they had been impacted, affected or anything by Night 1. Oh, man, let's start with you.
I think they had been impacted by Night 1 because I finished. So we're recording this the day after the release of that episode. So first off, big congratulations to Rockstar, who ran the Manchester Marathon the day before recording. So I listened to the review. And I was very much more on the Matt side of things in that I found it perfectly enjoyable Night 1. I thought the main event was sensational is too much, but I loved it. I was so very impressed with what they did. And it did give me a bit more hope for this evening. And I knew that this night was pretty stacked in terms of matches. So when I sat down to watch it, I was pretty bang up for this, to be honest. I had pretty high expectations. No fears, only hopes.
Good. We haven't got a full Keen album for this particular episode.
No.
Stephen, what about yourself?
I was really looking forward to this. I had a great time in WrestleMania House with Stuart Mark on the first night. Yeah. And it just was wonderful. And I really enjoyed the first night of WrestleMania. And so we went to bed and got up and it was like Rangers versus Celtic, Man United versus Liverpool. There's another football game after that. It was like the absolute stuff of dreams. The stuff that you used to be able to do when you were 18, 19 around a pal's house. But you can never do that stuff in modern adult life. So all of that intermixed with how good I thought WrestleMania Night 1 was with a very strong main event that kind of took a little bit of while to get going, but was really good in the end. I was really, really looking forward to this show.
Yeah, that'll be WrestleMania House that none of us were invited to, eh, old man?
That is true.
Yep. I mean, I was busy.
Yeah, me too. Still a bit bitter, though.
Yeah.
To be fair, there's only a three-bedroom house. It's a very limited invite list. So, yeah. What are we going to do next year? I don't know.
I imagine the invites went out before you booked the house, though, didn't it, Stephen? Let's be honest. Let's be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
Booked the house and then was like, well, I've got to pick three people. It was like, right, who's coming? Let's book the house.
You are right, Ben. Back in the day, so I think Stu Roberts, he hosted a SummerSlam and I've hosted a couple of WrestleManias down here. But with the two nights, you can't really, I feel like that's too much for a partner to put up with, especially like if you've got kids and stuff, which they both have. So that's why we looked into this idea. So it's very much for the three of us, though Dan did make a sneaky special guest appearance on the Sunday. But yeah, it was perhaps what we should look for is some sort of perhaps in the mid, what's equidistant between us, Bath or something like that?
No, Bath is way closer to us than it is.
Oh, okay. Perhaps we need like an 8-bedroom mansion next year for something somewhere. So maybe that'll be it. But to be honest, if I could afford to put us all into an 8-bedroom mansion, I think I probably won the lottery or something. So maybe the option would be Minneapolis or wherever it's going to be next year rather than that. So, yeah.
All right. Well, it's been noted, Stephen. It's been noted.
Yeah.
As I said, there's no way I could have done it, but that's not the point. My expectations were, I was bang up for this. I already talked about my problems on the Saturday. The Sunday, trying to watch Saturday night. But Monday, I had no such problems. I had the day off. There was nothing else to distract me from it. I literally had the whole day to watch it. So I went, took my son to nursery, and then came back, walked the dog, sat down, and watched this from start to finish, which is the first time I've done that for a wrestling show in, well, probably 18 months, if not 2 years. Like, it's been a heck of a lot of time since I've been able to do that. And when I sat down, I was like, right, I'm bang up for this. Let's go. And I was pleased to say I had no technical difficulties like I had for Night 1. So that excitement did not dissipate at all. Right then, on to talking points, and I'm going to yield the floor. I'm going to let one of you decide what we're going to talk about first. I'm going to let Old Man decide what we're going to talk about first.
Well, we can't not cover the main event first, can we? It would be remiss, because since watching it, I saw some people on the weekend. I managed to talk about it, but it's the first opportunity I've properly had to kind of like dissect my thoughts on the main event. And for me, at the time, and I think even more so as the week and a bit is worn on, it's just perfect. It's just absolutely a wonderful time was had in the Carey household. I just sat there and I thought they managed what had actually become quite a difficult situation in terms of the booking and the lead up, which has been discussed ad nauseum on the podcast. I thought that with the presence of Cena for a reason as well, which I very much appreciated, the fact that Solo Sikoa had hurt Cena previously, and then the appearance of the conscience of the WWE, The Undertaker, to stop The Rock, the final boss, a board member of the company, from basically interfering himself in the process, was magnificently done. And most of all, I thought, even to this point, I've read a couple of things where they were like, you know, up until the interference, I don't really think much of the match. I thought the match was phenomenal. I thought Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes deserve enormous credit for creating what was probably, it must have been 25 minutes into the match until any interference happened, to keep any semblance of drama and, to be honest, interest in place was absolutely masterful, I thought. Tremendous stuff.
Look at that. Look at that. Just out and out positivity. Yep. We don't get to say that very often. Is that going to continue, Stephen?
Well, I think it probably is. I mean, I use the word masterpiece very rarely when it comes to professional wrestling. And in WWE, it's usually reserved for one moment. And I think, Ben, you certainly know what I'm going to be talking about next, which I think is the greatest thing they've ever done in their history. And that was from the start of Randy Savage coming out to his reuniting with Miss Elizabeth at the end of WrestleMania 7, or the end of their match at WrestleMania 7. That was perfection. And this match got into that rarefied air, and it was flown directly into at WrestleMania 40. Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes was everything it needed to be and more. And as you said, Sam, they took a risk by doing a traditional wrestling match at the start of this and at the beginning without the shenanigans starting early. But because the crowd was so bought into these two and this story and all the twists and turns that got us up to this point, they went with it and they reacted to the near falls. And in so many of those situations, people are just waiting for the angle rather than what happened in the match. But no, this crowd was into this. And this was wrestling perfection at a level you really only get to experience so many times in your life. Perhaps a count on one hand, if you're really lucky to be into a product at a high level during these very, very ultra rare pinnacles. And this was just so well done on all levels, from the best ring announcer, perhaps the best ring announcer ever, but certainly the best ring announcer since Howard Finkel doing the opening, to Reigns putting the table away because he didn't want to do anything to get the crowd to cheer him, to his Roman Reigns, his Bret Hart 1997 level facials, just out of this world stuff, to the early near falls, to Jay taking out Jimmy, to John Cena coming out to face off Solo Sikoa, and the place exploding to The Rock. We nearly got the ultimate if it's Steve Austin's music had hit, but we got The Undertaker, and that was fine. You know, I wish it could have been Austin, but I'll let the silly old bastard The Undertaker off on this one occasion. The Shield stuff, the final pin, to the tears, not, you don't hear tears, but the tears around the world, to Michael Cole performing out of his skin on the call. This is why we've all stuck with wrestling for multiple decades. It's frustrating and wonderful art form for moments like this that are once in a generation, perhaps once in multi-generations. And everything post-match felt so unlike anything Vince McMahon would ever do. Vince McMahon would have been pin, couple of celebrations, fireworks, straight to a video package, but this was allowed to breathe, and with Cody and his family, and this was just wonderful. The Bret Hart WrestleMania 10 celebration with Cody on the shoulders, the way that Crockett and latterly New Japan would sign off with having someone get on the microphone, Cody's mum and Brandy. I mean, if I live to be 100, I can't imagine there'll be too many matches and entire presentations that got me on such a level. And they didn't just get me, they got seemingly the whole wrestling world. This was perfect.
Perfect. Is that a 10 out of 10, five-star
match? This is 10 out of 10 for me on Cage Match. I've done the rating. 5 stars all day long. This was phenomenal.
That's amazing. That's good stuff. I'll tell you what, I'll give you my rating out of 10. It's 9.5, and it drops 2/4 of a mark on for 2 different reasons. I'm doing this a bit tongue-in-cheek. The first one is the fact that Cody used his microphone time to bring out Bruce Pritchard and Triple H, which I thought was completely unnecessary. Yeah. Like, just say thank you. Say, this is the best moment of my life. You know, it's great to be around all the people I love, you know, and all of you fans. Thank you very much. That would have been absolutely perfect. But no, you've got to bring out Bruce Pritchard and Triple H of all people. Then the other quarter of a mark is what you said, and I've watched it like 7 or 8 times back since. Why couldn't it have been Austin to come out and counter The Rock?
Apparently he couldn't agree financial terms. They offered it to him. Yeah,
I know. And I just, I've watched, I said, every time I've watched it, I've gone, it's great. It is great. I just wish it was Austin. I just absolutely wish it was Austin, because that would have absolutely blown the sky off the earth with the noise that would have been made as a consequence of Austin. But other than that, you're absolutely right. This was perfect. And I do say that completely tongue-in-cheek. And to be honest, I have never... there's only one match I've ever rated a 10 out of 10. And it's the main event of Wrestle Kingdom in 2016. And I can't remember what the match was. It might have been Tanahashi and Okada, I think, the main event of that show.
Oh, yeah. So it starts... it was Tanahashi and Okada. It was the one after Nakamura and Ibushi, wasn't it?
AJ Styles, I think.
Oh.
Nakamura, AJ Styles.
27. Was it 2017 then?
No, it's definitely 2016.
Was it? Okay. 2017. Yeah.
Anyway, doesn't matter. So that's the only other match I've ever rated 10 out of 10. And this was a 9.5, so I'm as close as I could be to it. The everything about this was special. And you're absolutely right. Like they did take a gamble on just going a straight wrestling match for 25 minutes. I had a quick look up on SummerSlam 1998 to see how long the main event of that show was, only because that was a match where similarly people were expecting a heck of a lot of interference, all kinds of stuff going on, all kinds of shenanigans. And that never hit any kind of a peak of noise. This was Austin versus The Undertaker. And that only lasted 21 minutes in total. Cody and Roman already had more noise than that match did in 25 minutes, and they were just doing the wrestling bit. And then they had the bit that everyone is expecting. And I did at one point question whether or not it was a good idea to do such a lengthy normal match, because there was a fear that no one was going to accept that any of the big moves they did could be the end, because they knew that on this occasion there would be huge amounts of interference. But actually, the fans were so invested with it that they did just stay with it all the way through and allowed themselves to believe that the match might possibly finish on one of the big moves that came before any of the interference. There was some amazing moments as the match goes on. For example, very early on, Roman Reigns goes for a spear in the corner and gets a massive collision with the post as he goes into it, like properly, like really, really hard. It was excellent. There were moments that kind of hark back through history, and some of them were more subtle than others. Like, for example, obviously he did the bionic elbow again, and he did various moves that, you know, Cody has done over the years, but he also did a figure four quite early on, and I felt like that was a bit of a harken back to sort of Dusty's past with Ric Flair and all the rest of it. Then, of course, the best thing that harkened to the past was the moment where Roman Reigns hit Seth Rollins with a chair, which is just the most insanely brilliant storytelling, and everybody's talked about it. And, you know, it's one of those things where I can never fully tell whether we're just attributing something to WWE, which was just a happy coincidence. But I don't believe for a second that it was. The fact that Roman couldn't bring him, you know, wanted to hit Seth Rollins instead of Cody Rhodes with the chair because he wanted to get his revenge ultimately on Seth for doing exactly the same thing to him when the Shield split up. And the way Seth Rollins fell was exactly the same way.
Yeah.
You know, it was just wonderful. It was just such an amazing kind of moment of, this is the reason Roman Reigns lost, is because his anger with Seth Rollins going all the way back 10 years to the breakup of the Shield still remains. And I was just like, that's just great. That's the kind of material that, when we were talking about the preview of WrestleMania, we did the preview show of WrestleMania, that's the kind of stuff that I was itching for, was this, let's dig into this history because it's so rich, there's so much to it. And they did it in the match. They just saved so much of it for the match. The Roman kind of, after he did the crossroads saying that move sucks, nobody wins, I was like, fucking hell, this is so good. Like, Roman Reigns is so believable now in being who he is. I remember we were talking about Austin and The Rock, I think either WrestleMania 17 or WrestleMania 15 when we did those shows, and the way that they addressed one another during the match, you could kind of hear bits and pieces, and it was almost as like these two guys just properly hate each other, and the way they're talking, just, it feels real. Again, Roman Reigns managed to hit that, like it felt real. When Roman Reigns did the stuff he did, it just felt absolutely real. There were just so many of those great moments. I was on edge all the way through this match, like properly on the edge of my seat, nervous in a way that it was more, again, about, can they actually pull this off? Can they actually get to this perfect moment that so many people say that they would have had at WrestleMania 39 had Cody Rhodes won? Can they get themselves back there? And I think they did. And Matt said it on the show last week, but ultimately this was Avengers Endgame, and what had come before, whether it be last year or the night before, was Infinity War, and they just did it superbly well. And yeah, it was great. Just those two minor points that I would just love to have changed about it, but other than that, sensational.
I would liken what they did with coding and how they got how high they got this particular weekend would be if you're on a game show and you've got 500 grand, so you've got serious life-changing money banked, but you've got a 1 in 10 chance of getting £2 million. You take the 500 grand, and booking Cody to win last year is the sensible, right, all the kind of booking stuff over the years. Babyface wins when you get to that point. So you run a lot of risks by taking that chance. But what we all got as a result of them taking that chance, and I was very anti them taking that chance, but what can I say about that now when you've got one of the, I think by far the best end of a WrestleMania ever, and maybe the best end of a wrestling match, the best end of a pay-per-view they've ever done. It must be. I think this is one of the best things they've ever done. I know they've hit high points and, you know, Bret and Austin at WrestleMania 13 and various things that in isolation have been very good. But even Punk and Cena at that Money in the Bank, that wasn't an emotional response like this. That was like a moment in time at that moment. But this is what 13 or 14 year old kids are going to be talking about when they're 40 or 50, like we are about the stuff that we grew up on. So I can't understate how good this was. And I don't think it was that we were just in the moment and it got to us, because think how much good wrestling stuff that we've seen. Like, we've seen so much. And this was just a stratosphere beyond everything, really. It was unbelievable.
I thought as well, there was a point made on the Night One show about the freedom that the commentators are able to speak. I thought the commentary on this whole night, I thought they were a bit up and down on Night One, but I thought Graves, McAfee and Cole were sensational all night, and they brought it and then some in this match. Like you mentioned, Stephen, Michael Cole calling the finish and then talking about Cody Rhodes was absolutely incredible, because I think you're right, Stephen. I can't remember ever having this emotional a reaction watching wrestling. I cried watching it, like, a fair bit as well, because you felt so invested in it. It felt like, I know there's been a lot of stuff like, oh, it's a new era, but it feels like for the first time in a while, I can hang my hat on wrestling and it not be a great moment that's tainted by that horrible cunt who used to run the company. And I think it just felt so magical. And I think that Cole's call is a big part of that. Like, that's a call that I'll remember, I think, him talking about it, because he was just given by Graves and McAfee, he was just given the space to just talk. And he was just talking for, I don't know what it was, a minute or two, something like that. And also, what you said as well, Stephen, Samantha Irvin, she's not better than The Fink, I don't think. But for this era, this time in the world, really, she's the best that they could ever have do it, I think. She is absolutely extraordinary. Like, her ring announcing for the main event of Night One is the best ring announcing I think I've ever heard in my life. The way that she talked for those, like, what was it, 2 minutes, she built every single thing up. And by the end of it, I was basically frothing at the gills for the main event. And that's more than a bit down to her re-announcing, because it got me in the moment and it was like, this is a fucking big deal. Like, this isn't just a precursor to the main event, which I think it was described, like, well, Matt said that Triple H called this the perfect build to Night Two. And I do kind of see why he would say that. But Samantha Irvin made the main event of Night One not that, and made it just such this an important standalone thing. And I think she's my MVP of the night. She's my MVP of the whole weekend, actually, if I was doing that. But yeah, this is just extraordinary. I felt like the Bruce Pritchard thing, I felt like that was very pointed, because obviously Ronda Rousey's been fucking ragging him in basically every interview that she's done, saying that he's basically a cunt. Probably is. But it also felt like one of the boys having his back and maybe being like, look, actually, he's not a complete cunt. And I didn't mind that.
Not a complete cunt, but...
Yeah, yeah. Hey, to me,
70%.
Fair, yeah, but I thought the whole thing, even bringing out Pritchard and Triple H, was just magnificent, because it was just so joyous and so beautiful. I was a bit disappointed that the greatest rapper ever Little Wayne didn't come out, but you can't have it all, can you? And where was Snoop?
Yeah.
Where was Snoop?
Well, he should have been. I really did honestly believe he should have been out at the end. I felt like the backstage should have just poured open. Like, literally every baby face on the roster should have been out there at the end. It just would have felt great if, like, just literally everybody who was a babyface on the entire roster was there in the ring celebrating. And that would have included Snoop Dogg. So he would have got him if that had happened.
I also just want to... I know he got his flowers a little bit, but Seth Rollins this whole weekend, I think he should just retire because he'll never top it. He was extraordinary. And there's a moment where the wrestlers that are celebrating are in the ring, and Seth Rollins walks around and he's being like helped to the back by someone. I can't remember who it was. It might even have been Charles Robinson. But they just do a little thing where like Cody reaches through the ropes and shakes his hand, and they just have a little moment. And I don't think that would have happened in the previous regime, but it was so subtle, and it just felt like, I felt like they didn't have that massive embrace, because if you do that, you're kind of closing the book on a potential rivalry in the future. Whereas I think, like, this has been mentioned in other places, like Seth Rollins got quite badly injured, possibly genuinely actually, in the first night fighting with Cody, then lost his title because of that, then made the save for him to win the title. So he can lay a claim to having a large part of the title, and maybe he should get a shot. And I think if they do that whole beautiful embrace, it would taint that potential path that they go down. Go on, wrestling.
I thought, in terms of selfless performances over the weekend, I thought Seth Rollins was great. I can't help but say, though, I was pissing myself laughing when every single time he tries to get involved, he just got beaten down. And it's just like, this is your creative, Seth. You're losing the title, and every single thing you do, you're going to lose. So, yeah. But when you took a step, I feel like the Seth stuff, in the moment, I was like, that's just like the Shield thing. But actually, I feel like you needed... I personally needed a moment to kind of separate some of that stuff and kind of realize. But it was, I mean, again, tremendously, tremendously well done, and fair play to him.
You, like you said, everything he did, he got beaten. And I feel like that's got to lead to something at some point in the future, hopefully a long way away. And I feel like they've got the institutional memory now to kind of actually do this in a long time, you know, in a far, far away from now. Like, I feel like, again, under the previous regime, this would have been like the next night on Raw. Seth would have just attacked Cody for no reason. It would never have been explained, and we had just been expected to go with it. But I feel like this is now an organization that will hold that back at some point. And maybe Seth, over the next year, will have an awful year where he just can't get himself back up to where he wants to be, loses a number of important matches, even, you know, maybe gets to the end of the Rumble and then still loses, like becomes a runner-up or whatever. And so they build this kind of overall just bitterness within Seth. Like, they would, you know, they could go in a lot of different directions, but like, I feel like there's a really good story there to tell if they want to tell it. And obviously the fact that he sacrificed himself for Cody is huge, and that surely is going to make some kind of appearance at some point in the future, or at least there's surely a plan for that to happen. Whether or not whoever's in charge, Triple H right now, will continue to be in charge for long enough to see it through, who knows? But the point is that surely, you know, he's got that in mind as something in the future. But yeah, I thought he was great. I think he was really good. And I agree, that bit after the match when he's kind of being, everybody else is celebrating, they're celebrating for like 4 or 5 minutes, and you don't see Seth at all because he's selling his injuries. And then he gets up and he's being helped back, and Cody shakes his hand almost to sort of say thanks for what you did, and Seth, and it kind of being nice, but at the same time not being this kind of absolutely, you know, the most, it was kind of a respectful thing as opposed to a joyous thing. And I just thought that was a really, really great extra little bit that fostered that feeling, belief in me that there's more to come even from this, which is just delicious, isn't it?
It was greatly nuanced where, as you say, I'm sure the kind of old regime would have had the desire just to kind of be a big old like hug, and then Seth might turn in the next night. But you don't need that, because actually, you know, a lot of life is not black or white, is it? It's these bits in between. So I thought that was great.
And my MVP is Roman Reigns. If for no other reason than the bit where he says, "This is my company, you little bitch," as he's beating Cody. but no, just sensational all the way through. Facial expressions, the things he was saying, the work they did for 25 minutes. This match was incredibly dramatic, And nobody thought it was going to end before anyone got involved. And yet it still was incredibly dramatic for 25 minutes. That's really impressive. He was excellent. And, you know, he's just had, you know, I'm the first person to point out that the title reign that he had was actually only a long title reign for the Universal title, not for the WWE title, because his WWE title reign was actually only 2 years. But still a phenomenal title reign in this day when you kind of see belts change hands so much more regularly than you did in the 80s. Anything else anyone wants to say about the main event before we move on?
Only that Cody's my MVP and that is my match of the night. I'm sure you'll be shocked to hear.
Yes, my match of the night too. Yeah.
Yes, and mine. I'll be honest, I'd say I've drained the last piece of jizz out of me bollocks, so it might be slow going now.
To be honest, I the thing is also you said about like your reaction. I didn't cry, but I did jump up when Cody won. Mm. I legitimately jumped up when he won. When I watched it back, I was like, well, he's obviously going to win now. Come on, this is ridiculous. But in the moment, you know, you can't be sure. And I think, again, for me, that's another, taking your point about it being a huge risk, that's another reason why it was valuable to do last year.
Yeah.
Because it kind of made you doubt that he would actually do it, even when he did it. It was just perfect. All right. So now old man's had the best talking point of all. What's yours, Stephen?
Yeah.
Joe, I'm going to do a really, really short one. Cool. Because, yeah, I haven't really prepared this. So I thought we might do the main event first. So I'm going to just say I enjoyed the vindictiveness of not allowing Vince McNonce's favourite Americana song, America the Beautiful, to be sung at WrestleMania so very much that obviously we got Star Spangled Banner on the first night and God Bless America on the second night, which I can remember absolutely nothing about. So that's my talking point. I just enjoyed the vindictiveness that Vince McMahon could not derive any joy from these shows and you got him right at the start. So if he was watching, it's all downhill from there for him.
If he was watching, he tuned out immediately, basically.
Exactly, so. Yeah. He's like, oh, you fucker, Triple H. You can't believe it. And if he calls his son-in-law Triple H's wrestling name, I don't know, he might do.
The thing is, Stephen, whilst it may have drained Vince of any joy that he got from this show, it also nearly did the same for me. I was not best pleased that we had this happen because, look, they did the national anthem the day before. And I was happy with that. I was like, you know, that's fine. We don't have to have America the Beautiful on both nights. That's not a problem. But then for them to do, what was it, God Bless America instead of America the Beautiful was a step too far. As a new era too far for me. But, you know, whatever.
I thought if they were going to do God Bless America, they should have had Triple H sing it. Just to properly, like, grind in. Or he does America the Beautiful, the last version, with the BX band.
Oh, that would have been nice, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, isn't the leading?
I must
dead?
Say, I did think that the people who... Oh, didn't know that.
Yeah, so that would be difficult.
The people that sang the song were called War and Treaty.
Mm.
I mean, don't know what that's
excellent,
about.
Excellent, I thought.
Yeah, it was good, actually. It wasn't bad, but it just wasn't America the Beautiful. I mean, you know, ultimately, what does it matter? What does it matter? It wasn't the right song. I do wonder, though, how much, like, the artists themselves have got to do with this. Like, you know, did WWE reach out and go, look, we want you to sing America the Beautiful? And they go, yeah, I'll do it, but can I sing this song instead? Because we know it. We know we've done it before. I wonder sometimes whether that happens. And I think you're probably right, Stephen. I think that probably the choice was, fuck Vince, we're going to not do America the Beautiful.
Yeah,
and also, like, this is a new era. We're just going to add the cherry on top to that new era. But I also wonder whether that does happen. Like, you know, well, you know, maybe they gave him a choice. They said, look, you can do anything but America the Beautiful. And they chose this. All right, then. Well, seeing as you've kind of passed the buck a little bit there, Stephen, I'll go with the other thing. Because there was one other thing that I genuinely thought was sensational on the show. And it was the Money in the Bank cash-in by Damian Priest following the match between Seth Rollins and Drew McIntyre. So I said, when I went into this show, I was bang up for it. This first match and the Money in the Bank cash-in was like, okay, this is already could be the best WrestleMania of all time. I loved this match and I loved the Money in the Bank cash-in. I thought it was sensational. I love the match between Seth Rollins and Drew McIntyre. They went straight into it. Drew McIntyre hitting the Claymore kick, but they didn't let up. They went all the big moves all the way through, nothing but big moves right from the start. The only problem I did have was they didn't introduce CM Punk, which was a bit odd. They kind of just had him next to the announcers, which these shows are long enough. You can give CM Punk an entrance for crying out loud.
They did it just before the show started because you could hear it on the pre-show.
Right, okay.
But they didn't show it on the pre-show. You could just hear his music, which is weird, isn't it?
How mad is that? But then, yeah, they have this incredible, incredible match. And then Drew wins, obviously. And then Drew very nearly gets my MVP for his performance, as he's kind of emotional. Mm. He's selling the fact that he's finally got his moment, the moment that was effectively taken away from him at WrestleMania 36 as a consequence of COVID. He's got his world championship. There's actually some cheers. There's, you know, plenty of cheers in the crowd for his victory, as I think a lot of people in the crowd were also in tune with that same moment. And then he can't help, again, another character that can't help doing something because of their emotions, as opposed to just an arbitrary need to do something. He couldn't help but kind of push it in the face of CM Punk, even doing the suck it, which then meant that Punk couldn't help but lash out and pull McIntyre's leg from underneath him. And as he's beating him up, and then Damian Priest's music comes on, what was amazing is that it then dawned on CM Punk, sold the moment perfectly, as if it was dawning on him that, oh, fuck, I didn't even imagine this might be a consequence of what I'm doing. But this is great. I love the fact that this is going to happen to Drew McIntyre. And then Damian Priest won it. And I was thinking about all like when before this match started, I was like, there's so many different possibilities here. When I thought what might happen is Seth might win and then Priest might cash in. CM Punk might interfere on either one's behalf and help them to win. Or Drew McIntyre is going to win the title. But I did not expect Drew McIntyre to win and Damian Priest to cash in, especially as they're heel versus heel. And I, in my really basic idea of booking, would have been like, well, you can't do that, because then you can't do the rematch between Damian Priest and Drew McIntyre. But that was what was great about this, is that actually Drew McIntyre's anger wasn't with Damian Priest. It was with CM Punk, because CM Punk was the one who cost him it. And it was just phenomenal stuff. I was just like, this is perfect. They could not have started this show in a better way for me than this match and this Money in the Bank cash in. I loved it.
We've just been being positive about Seth Rollins, and then my first couple of lines in my notes are slagging him off. So let's go back to slagging him off. his whole run has kind of been about him wearing zany clothes, but with no real explanation around who he is past. Apparently he's a visionary, and fortunately for him, because otherwise his character wouldn't be over, people hum his theme tune. Longtime Pro Wrestling Moments co-host Dan put it best when his entourage came out and he said, what are they supposed to be dressed as? Divs, which I thought was quite funny in the moment. that all said, as you said, Ben, I really, really enjoyed this. This was roaring near full start after near full after start the match, doing everything like 100 miles an hour. It reminded me of kind of a longer and better Goldberg versus Lesnar from whatever WrestleMania that was, 33, I think. I was so pleased that Brit Drew McIntyre finally won the big one in front of a live crowd, after how much he's done in recent times to kind of work on his character and make himself a really key and must-see part of Monday Night Raw, which I don't think can be kind of understated how good he is. For those counting, according to my Stephen Coriander's world title legitimacy chart, that's the fourth men's British world title reign with some legitimacy. Now, if you want to complain about that, about Magnus in TNA or Drew, send some postcards to Ben. The post-match with Punk was so, so great. Obviously, aside from, I don't know, what were the White Sox all about? That was really bizarre.
Yeah, that wasn't for me either. No.
Do you think he'd put the wrong socks in or something? It just wasn't a
either
thing.
Either the wrong socks or the wrong trousers, because they were too short for those socks.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I think he needed to go no socks, didn't he? But perhaps his shoes were uncomfortable. And I must be honest, I was quite sad that Scott Drew did lose in this cash-in, because Priest is certainly a level down, and the gulf in star power between the two champions is now, you know, it started the weekend quite far apart, and dare I say it's not far off a light year now. But in conclusion, this is a really super start to the show.
Yeah, I agree completely. You've got the bagpipe lads playing McIntyre in. That they've obviously done before, but this was sensationally done, I thought. Rollins' outfit, too much, even for me. But the disdain that both Punk, McIntyre, and then in addition, seemingly Samantha Irvin had for it, kind of sold it for me. I was a bit like, oh, bloody heck. But they sold it lovely. I thought the match was absolutely brilliant, and it made complete sense given what Rollins had been through the night before as well. Like, the worst thing they could have done was to start locking up and doing holds. It would have made absolutely no sense. And the 10-minute sprint that they had was as good as they could have done, I think, regardless of the layup to the match. I thought the post-match was absolutely perfect, because you had, like you said, Tinky, the crowd with McIntyre. There's the moment with his wife. There's also a moment, which neither of you mentioned, where Drew is looking out up the ramp and Rollins is walking backwards. And Rollins is basically says, you fucking deserve that, man. Which I kind of irks me a little, but I also thought really played into what this whole thing was, because he then does that, and I think he might say he's like, you're damn fucking right or something, and then he gets into all the punk stuff, which I thought was amazing. And the same as you, Tinky, did not think for a second that they'd have a heel cash in on a heel, but it was absolutely brilliant. Do take your point, Stephen, that it feels like Priest is probably a fair bit lower than Rollins in the ranking, but I also look at who he's going to probably face in terms of for this title, and I'm like, actually, there's quite a dearth of high-level talent outside of McIntyre and Punk, and they're obviously going to go off and do something together now. So yeah, cracking stuff. What a start. And before that, we had Stephanie McMahon. Fucking hell, lads. Come on. The creator of women's wrestling.
I did really love it. I thought it was just a superb start to the show. And Damian Priest is an interesting one because I don't know. I mean, obviously, Matt is very, you know, was very anti Damian Priest cashing in and being victorious. And I don't know if he's going to be able to live up to the billing of World Heavyweight Champion, to be perfectly honest with you. But I think you've got to take a chance. Like, this is, I guess this is the beauty, the luxury of having two world titles, is that you can take a risk with one of them and put it on somebody that's not as sort of ready maybe for that top level. And so I can live with that. I think that's a decent way to go. You know, I'd still rather them have just one, but I guess if you've got to, you can now take this kind of a risk. And maybe Damian Priest's title reign will be worth it. If not, then they've lost nothing. They've still got this great moment. They've still created multiple. They've enhanced the Drew McIntyre CM Punk feud. They've still got Seth Rollins dropping the belt, and as I said, can use that later on for Rollins just eventually come to the conclusion that he regrets helping Cody, but maybe a long way down the line. Like, plenty to use this for. So yeah, I say take the risk and see what happens. They've already determined that his first challenger for the title is going to be Jey Uso, by the sounds of things, on Raw, because he won a four-way match, I think, to become the number one contender. Presumably that's going to happen at the next the Backlash France show, I would imagine.
A quick note on Jey Uso, actually. I was disappointed not to cover night one because I wanted to absolutely eviscerate that state of a match that they had, him and Jimmy, on night one, because it was an absolute abomination that anyone thought that that kind of match was going to hit with any sort of crowd. I was so confused by it all. Just sat there bewildered. And they almost lost me for the whole weekend with that match, but they bloody got me back, didn't they? Come on. Come on, wrestler.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that Jey did when he speared Jimmy off the stage during the main event was about 10 seconds worth and was like about a billion times better than anything they did in their match on night one. Fabulous stuff.
Oh, it was terrifying.
It was. It was a great bump.
Yeah, absolutely. And it looked like they almost missed the tables, which, oh, blimey, don't bear thinking about. Oh,
seeing as we're on Jey, why don't we quickly talk about this? Because obviously the SmackDown after WrestleMania, and by the way, this, we are recording this on the 15th of April. We have not seen the Raw that takes place on the same day or the SmackDown after that. But that Jimmy obviously kind of got seemingly booted out of the Bloodline by Solo Sikoa and a debuting Tama Tonga. Do we think they're now going to just put the Usos back together in order to face the two of them?
Yes, probably. But I think Jimmy will probably get some time off, I would have thought. But yeah, I suppose, I mean, I don't know when Roman is going to be back, but Rock is probably not doing SummerSlam, is he? I don't believe.
Who knows?
Because I think I read somewhere, and I can't remember the names of the two wrestlers from NXT went down and spent like 10 weeks with them or something. So he did like a proper training camp for this. So he won't have time to do a 10-week training camp before SummerSlam. So I think that pushes that out. Unless they do I can't remember where this was floated, but obviously, you know, they're obviously moving to Netflix. Well, they could create something for the first, like a first Netflix thing, even though their PLEs are still on Peacock in the States. I guess there's nothing stopping them doing a free-to-air thing on Netflix as part of that deal, I would have thought. Maybe
They could do Raw. Could be the first episode of Raw.
Commercial, yeah, exactly. That's a really great shout. Commercial free, first episode of Raw, Rock versus whoever, would be massive, wouldn't it? So I wouldn't surprise me if we get some sort of inter-bloodline thing at Survivor Series, but I suspect Roman won't be around for a long time now. And I think that's the right thing. I think let that breathe. Let Solo and Tama Tonga do whatever they need to do. I presume we'll get Jacob for two at some point as well. I've heard a lot of good things about that. I can't recall ever seeing a match of his. Shame on me. But yeah, I think that was good. I think the Jimmy and Jey thing, you've got to take some time with that. I think Jimmy's just got to go away. Maybe Jimmy can help Jey in a situation to like make up for it, make up for things, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, they've got to, if they're going to do the whole apology thing, they've got to do it better than they did on night one of WrestleMania. Yeah.
I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry.
Oh, all right, sorry, then. No problem, then.
Just before we move on, just to comment on that SmackDown segment, that was sensational. It was 8 minutes, I think, and they achieved so much. And we didn't actually touch on this when we were talking about the main event. I loved Solo Sikoa screaming at Roman Reigns, "You've got to finish it now. You've got to finish it." And Roman Reigns, exhausted, absolutely exhausted, just going, "Oh, I know. And I was like, "You've just dripped this little thing in there." And they've kept doing this with the two of them. I thought, wonderful. Go on, yeah, wrestling.
They have, but they've really got to rehabilitate Solo in terms of as a competitor, because I think he's lost some of the last 30-odd matches that he's had. So they really need to give him some wins. And they'll probably start that with just them getting a load of tag victories. But I agree. I enjoyed the segment. I did find it a bit, what do we do now? How's this going to work with Jimmy? Because Jimmy can't just switch to a babyface. This would be the classic heel turns on heel, so now this heel's a babyface. No, that doesn't work. But, you know, I think also this is Solo's chance now, break out and be the man for a little bit. And you're probably right. Jimmy probably does go away and have a break now, and they kind of perhaps bring him back when Jay's in peril, perhaps against Solo Sikoa and Tama Tonga, who knows? And they kind of, then they can figure out a way to get them back together.
It's exciting, isn't it? Go on, wrestling. Hey!
Well, that's it. Like, I think the key, though, I think the key is not necessarily that this was an amazing segment or that there was an amazing segment on Raw, because I'd say Raw was relatively average. I'd say SmackDown was relatively average. But I think why people are excited is because there's trust now that this builds to something important. Whereas I think in the previous regime, you'd be like, well, I don't trust them to stick with this for longer than 3 weeks, so I'm just not going to pay attention. I'm just not going to bother. Whereas now you actually feel like there's going to be a payoff to this stuff. They've got ideas, they've got plans for the future for this. Just interesting, though, when we talked about Netflix and the idea of Rock maybe appearing on the first Raw, does this kind of completely null and void the ideas of PLEs now? Like, because if you think about Netflix and everything being effectively equal, like if everything's on Netflix and they're all as equally important as everything else, do PLEs continue to be important? What's the... I guess they're still live attendance, so I guess that might be the now. Funny how these things change, that live attendance suddenly, once again, perhaps becomes the key driver of business.
I don't think it's absolutely guaranteed that the PLEs will go on to Netflix after the Peacock deal expires.
That's true.
Albeit, you'd think that WWE have said maybe, like, this is up at this point and we can bolt this on, because obviously it will be in the UK, so it'll be very simple. And actually, I understand that WrestleMania aired live in New Zealand on Netflix, a test.
So that
can happen, but I guess that's where it's going. They'd have to up that $5 billion if that was going to happen, for sure. But yeah, that Rock on the first Netflix Raw worldwide, apart from I think India, I think everywhere else in the world it's on Netflix, I believe. That's a huge thing, and maybe that is the night to do something big.
Maybe.
That is absolutely mind-blowing, isn't it? The amount of subscribers they have around the world.
Yeah.
If you capture 10% of that audience, my God, what a business. I really wish I had shares in the company.
Well, you're talking about now the ability for WWE to have those really humongous television ratings like they did with Saturday Night's Main Event, for example, again, for the first time in a long time, because A, no one has to watch it live. They can just watch it when they choose to, especially if word of mouth goes, oh yeah, that was really good, and you've got most people got Netflix anyway, so they go, oh, I'll have a look, you know. So yeah, the potential is there, definitely. So before we go to break, let's go back to the start of the show, where first thing that happened was Cole reporting that nobody had seen Cody all day and he'd been locked in his bus during that time. Why is he in a bus? What's going on? Why is he in a dressing room like everyone else? What's going on there?
Well, I think he lives on that bus on the road, doesn't he?
Does he live on it? Does he?
Yeah.
Lex Express.
It is the Lex Express. Our Punk had one and seen it. I think Big Show was the first one, didn't he? They've got this. Was the Punk's bus? Was on. What was the DVD? There was a DVD where he was on it with Kofi. He's shirt with Kofi Kingston. They fell out. Kofi Kingston was sleep down one end and Punk was sleep down the other. But the bus is incredible. They had like an Xbox on there. Lovely time, I'm sure, was had by all.
I haven't seen this. But I was a bit like, what is he in a bus?
Hold on. You haven't seen Punk's best bus bits on DVD, no? I know. Big seller of 2013.
It's a terrible. I mean, I consider myself a little bit of a completist, but that one passed me by. Then we had Bailey and Damage Control showing arriving in the building. Highlights of night one. Then Meek Mill does his second night of narration. fine. McIntyre, Rollins backstage await their match. We then get God Bless America sang by War and Treaty. And then Stephanie McMahon is introduced to the crowd. She says she's been at every WrestleMania, says this is the first WrestleMania of the Paul Levesque era. She then asks Philadelphia, are you ready? She then says it's time to kick off night two at WrestleMania. So, yeah, pick what you want to choose out of that lot. If there's anything there you want to talk about.
I mean, I was my intention was to try and make notes as I watched this all the way through, so I didn't have to watch it again, but I couldn't do that. And I didn't rewatch this, so I can't really remember what she said, other than we all speculated what you could guess we were speculating. So we wondered what she knew about her wretched old father. But, and that's the problem with all this Triple H stuff, is that he is, and I can, you guys talked about it on the show last week around him putting himself out there. Now he's putting himself out there because he isn't in control of his own destiny. There's no Vince McMahon to keep his son-in-law employed if the chips go down. You know, he's putting himself out because he wants to seem indispensable. So I do wonder if there's some dirt on these two, they'll be gone. So it is, you know, are we going to get digitized Triple H at the start of WrestleMania 40 because, you know, he knew more than, you know, he's sort of the public are aware, but we shall see.
This definitely felt deliberate on a number of levels. I think, first of all, Triple H knows he's done it all of his career, right? He knows how to keep himself in the spotlight, in the important position, in the eyes of television executives, the public, the fan base. You know, he knows how to keep himself relevant and as if he is important. So I feel like there's a degree of that. But I also felt like this was a WWE or a TKO edict as well. Like, it felt like this was them going, we have to separate this business from Vince McMahon. And this is our chance to do it. Let's really big up that this is the Paul Levesque era, when what we're really saying is this is the not Vince McMahon era. Yeah. And so I felt like almost like a happy coincidence here that you've got Triple H, who's somebody who's got an eye for self-promotion and knows how to keep himself relevant and important to everybody. But at the same time, a TKO with a need to, from a PR perspective, move the company on publicly. So I felt like this is a bit of both coming together here. And interestingly, though, that they decided Stephanie could be part of that, given, again, the very obvious connection to her dad.
Apparently one of the reasons why she's left and come back multiple times, I'm guessing that she was keeping her nose clean because there was probably some knowledge of what may have been going on. It's just fucking horrible, isn't it? Horrible shit. On another note, I thought Big Meek Mill, I thought he was fucking great both nights. Really enjoyed it.
I didn't think he was bad. And to be honest, it wasn't, the reason I said it was only fine was nothing to do with him. It was just that this was the same setup we've had at least 3 years in a row now. Poor Meek. Yeah, he meekly inherited a situation that we've been through at least three times now. And I feel like we needed to move on to something different this year. Bring it back, by all means, the celebrity walking around and talking on screen. But it's been done. Let's do something else next time.
On another note, just a quick question, actually. How do you feel about them showing the wrestlers turning up before the show as a standard now?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I don't really fully back the whole Cody Rhodes sleeps on a bus thing, to be perfectly honest. So that's not great. And then, yeah, I don't know. I don't feel like there's a... I think the thing is that during the 90s, we got a lot of people arriving by limousine, and now they seem to walk in with a carry case, which does somehow feel somewhat less prestigious to me. So I feel like maybe not do this, but it's not a huge, I haven't got a huge opinion on it.
Cody was asleep on his bus when it set fire the other day, so he very much sleeps on that bus.
Yeah.
Also, it's obviously a way to advertise the vodka, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose so. Ultimately, going back to the Stephanie thing, she did quit when Vince McMahon came back. So that seems to be a very clear indication that she was not happy with that situation, which might suggest that she did know about some stuff that had happened, although she may very well claim that that was as a consequence of the investigation they'd already done, which she then found out some stuff. I don't know. But I guess that might tell you something, the fact that Stephanie quit when Vince came back the last time.
And also, I highly doubt that she knew the nut. She wouldn't have known about, let's be frank, she probably wouldn't have known about the text message or content on. I don't think she would have known at all, or the most severe allegations there. What I suspect that she and others knew that Vince abuses power, which unfortunately a lot of men in similar positions to Vince have done over the years, which is not to make an excuse of that, but that is not, that's terrible. But what go from terrible to the stuff that came out in that lawsuit and the text messages was, you know, outer worldly ghastly. So yeah, I think that's probably why she resigned in the first place.
I guess also, even if it's an open secret that some of this stuff is happening, i.e. everyone kind of knows, but it's all a little bit kind of whispers and whatever, like, even if Stephanie gets wind of it, is she really going to believe it about her own father?
Yeah,
and is she the most is she the most unlikely person to then do something about it? Because, you know, how can she may even be protecting herself from believing it about her own father. Do you know what I mean? Like, you'd want to kind of almost tell yourself, no, this couldn't possibly happen, even if you thought they might be possible. You still tell yourself that it wasn't. So I just feel like we may find out that they knew more, but I'd be surprised, to be honest. And I think unless you are really truly a part of it, as Vince and supposedly John Laurinaitis were, and potentially Brock Lesnar, who knows, he was named in the lawsuit, that I doubt you knew the absolute severity of this stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, then we get the bagpipers, as you said, old man. And at the time when they started up, Michael Cole, Pat McAfee and CM Punk were talking, and they were talking in a way that was not commentary. They were basically, I think Punk was like, what's going on? Am I being introduced? And Cole was like, no, we're going to do it in a minute. Something like that. It was like, all right, guys, you realize you're still live. Your mics are still on. And contrary to you, Stephen, I liked Seth Rollins' entrance with all the mad stuff going on. I thought it was quite fun. It did bear more than a passing resemblance to the Rosebuds from Adam Rose, but I still find it quite interesting.
That's your right to, Ben. That's fine.
Then there was an advert for a WWE documentary about the making of the story of WrestleMania behind the curtain, with a promise that it would be on YouTube. And I thought it said Wednesday, but I'd look for it this week and I couldn't find it. So
no, it's not. They've decided to re-edit it because they got so much good footage over the weekend.
Ah, that makes sense. I mean, I'm not sure I'm completely behind it, like promoting the how this was all made before it's even finished happening. I've got some philosophical issues with that, to be perfectly honest, because on the as well as the fact that you're actually on the show, that you're completing this story, you're telling us now, oh, by the way, we made this and we're going to show you how we made it in a few weeks time. Like, that's not good for me.
Agreed.
And then before we go to break, we had the New Day arguing about their game of Scrabble in a Snickers advert. And then we had the special guest commentator for the next match, Snoop Dogg, and a special guest referee, Bubba Ray Dudley. And we'll talk about their contributions after the break. So join us then.
Paul. Kayla. First of all, congratulations on your Hall of Fame induction.
Thank you. How are we going to celebrate?
By answering this question. Okay, so last night, after Roman Reigns and The Rock were victorious in their match, it was determined that tonight will be bloodline rules between Cody and Roman Reigns. Can you please tell us exactly what bloodline rules are?
Oh, yes. Well, according to the WWE official rulebook, page 87, subsection D, paragraph 4. Come on. What are bloodline rules? Bloodline rules, Kayla, are anything that are determined by the tribal chief, the final boss, and the wise man to be bloodline rules. No disqualification, no count out, one fall to an absolutely, positively declarative finish. Until one man is announced as the undisputed Universal Heavyweight Champion and the other man goes home to his wife, Brandy. Tonight, Kayla, live in Philadelphia, Roman Reigns and Bloodline Rules.
Right, welcome back to WrestleMania XL Night 2. And guys, do you realize that this is the final half of podcast that we will have to do on WrestleMania? Well, at least for a year, until WrestleMania 41 takes place, of course. And that's big time. And what's also big time is something I forgot to mention. And it was awful of me that I forgot to mention it last week. I feel very, very bad. But literally in the course of all the work we're doing to get these two episodes out, in fact, I had to watch both nights of WrestleMania on the Saturday and on Sunday and Monday and create special time for it and then get the WrestleMania Night 1 episode edited and everything. I neglected to mention that WrestleMania Night 1 would be the last episode, at least for a little bit, for Matt Roberts, who is taking a little bit of a break from the podcast for the next few months. He will be back intermittently over the course of the year, but on a much less less regular basis. You know, he needs some time to do some other things. And I think he's got a passion for watching other stuff than WrestleManias, ironically, when we're just about to finish. But, you know, that's fair enough. And I really just wanted to say, really, that, you know, we give Matt a pretty hard time in general on this pod. He is the polar bear after all. He's kind of the opposite to, in opinion, to many, many, many things. But his role has been absolutely crucial in the history of the podcast, not least when, for example, Tom decided he was going to go down to one every two episodes and we needed someone to come in and help us do the alternating episode with Tom. And Matt did that, filled that void for us brilliantly. Then when the WrestleMania series hit, he did pretty much all of the episodes at the start. I think he did the first like 13 or 14 WrestleManias. He's been absolute necessity to be with us. And you've got to admire the sheer will to dig in and be the polar bear time and time again. And I don't think he's put on either. I think he genuinely is talking with the strength of his own convictions, which I can only say is absolutely right down my alley. The one thing that I can absolutely say I totally am on board with is Matt digging in and just being himself and expressing the opinions that he has, as opposed to just trying to fit in and not rock the boat. So thank you very much, Matt. It has been an absolute pleasure. And as I said, it's not the end, but we're just not going to see him for quite as often going forward.
Well said, Tinky. And you know what? In a weird way, I'm kind of glad that you didn't get to do that last week, because I think he would have probably fucking pied you off and
probably
and tried to stop you doing it. So now he's just going to have to listen and get his little stiffy on his own, isn't he?
Yeah, that was incredible, Ben. Matt, I'm hoping that we see each other again at All In weekend, because yeah, you're an absolute fucking legend, my mm-hmm. Welsh brother from another mother. So yeah, I look forward to spending some more time with you, and good, and enjoy your break. We're on a break.
I kind of wish you were brothers, because it would almost be like twins in terms of the size, just the height difference between you. When I saw you stood next to each other, I was like, my goodness, just so tall compared to Matt. Like, Matt's a surprisingly short guy. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. Right, let's move on with WrestleMania XL. And I said we had a special commentator for this match with Snoop Dogg and a special guest referee, Bubba Ray Dudley. And the match itself was the Final Testament against The Pride. The Final Testament is Karrion Kross and Akam and Rezar. And The Pride is Bobby Lashley, Angelo Dawkins and Montez Ford. This was a six-man tag Philadelphia street fight. And it was won by The Pride after Montez did a big frog splash through a table and Lashley pinned Karrion Kross. Stephen, what did you make of this?
I couldn't be bothered to do any research on it, but my failing memory as I advance to my mid-40s is that Bubba Ray Dudley is somewhere between a bit of a twat and a horrid cunt. So I wasn't exactly enthralled to see him, especially rare. There's some horrible stuff out there, isn't there? Sam, you seem to maybe be more informed than me on this.
I think he, in his ECW days, in particular early days, well, there's some of the promos that he cuts where he can just basically say what he wants that are absolutely awful. And I do believe that he's been known to rough some people up quite badly. And also, I just find him very obnoxious. And he's the kind of guy, I get the feeling, this is completely an opinion, so he was on the Broken Skull sessions with Austin. Obviously, he's talking to the fucking biggest superstar ever in wrestling, so he's talking very differently. But I've also heard him say some absolute flannel, like in a very, very derogatory way, on that fucking Busted Open bollocks that he does.
Busted and, Open bollocks, fucking hell.
And I'm just like, you fucking did this for 20 years? Have a bit of fucking respect. And he's friends with Tommy Dreamer. Tommy Dreamer's a fucking cunt. So yeah, they're all cunts. Apart from Mark Henry. Cunts.
Though I think he said something cuntish this past week as well, didn't he?
I think you're right. I don't know what it was, but I think he's right or something.
I've already done a dude wipes gag, but I've got another one written here. So this is dude wipes round two. So this match was sponsored by Gin and Juice, which wasn't my favourite sponsor night. That, of course, was dude wipes for those with shitty bums. Shout out to RW Original Tom. I hope you're well and Double Parenthood is treating you fabulously.
Shitty bums and busted bollocks. We're really in trouble.
I love Snoop's. I love Snoop's commentary, particularly, oh lord, a double decker when the Street Profits were slammed into each other in a powerbomb position, and later when a headbutt was dropped into Karrion's testes, he talked about the Nutcracker being his favourite childhood movie. Snoop was so good here. Scarlett had the most ridiculous block heels. I don't know if there's any ladies listening. Please tweet me if I've not described those heels properly. But they certainly were not designed for Russian leg sweeps off or apron for a table, which is scary looking spot. This wasn't really for me in ring, but the crowd seemed to like it enough. Snoop was great and it didn't overstay its welcome. There we go.
See, he's a broadcast journalist to the end there. Even when talking about fashion, it is in the context of whether or not it's a good thing to execute a wrestling move or not. Stephen, too, am I to believe that you enjoyed Snoop Dogg's commentary?
I really enjoyed Snoop Dogg's commentary, yes.
That is music to my ears, because I did too, and Matt absolutely hated it. And I was like, he was fantastic. I was like, I'd rather have him every week, to be honest. It was so much fun listening to him talk, like just coming at it from a completely different perspective, and one that was completely unaffected by anything WWE were trying to do. So he was just like having a great time.
Agree entirely. Snoop is the MVP of this match, if not the whole night. I love when they're talking about how they were all in a room and Snoop and Pat McAfee were smoking. Pat McAfee implied that Carl was high off secondhand smoke, and then Snoop just outright saying that he's pissed as a fire, basically, that he's been drinking his little gin and juice drinks. I thought this was absolutely fine. I don't understand how Akam and Razor can be wiped out for quite so long as they were by Montez Ford doing an absolutely extraordinary leap over the turnbuckle again, almost into the front row, which was ever so slightly terrifying. Love the side Russian leg sweep through the table. What a move to do. One of the more dangerous moves that you can probably do on a height that isn't straight onto the mat. So fair fucking play to Scarlett and B-Fab, who I had to look up, didn't know who B-Fab was, who also did a cracking pump kick to Scarlett. And I've never seen Scarlett work a lick. And she obviously had a couple of things to do here. She was cracking in this. I thought she was the best on her team. Definitely. Definitely. Akam and Razor are just not very good. Karrion Kross, cut your hair, mate. Disgraceful. Absolutely disgraceful. And I can't even grow hair. And the shit with Bubba Ray, as much as I don't like him, I thought it was pretty cool. And it was quite nice. And it was a bit of fun for everyone involved. And to steal your line, Stephen, didn't outstay its welcome. What more do you want?
Yeah, I thought this was good. I thought this was pretty decent, to be honest. Like, again, just judging from the crowd reaction, they enjoyed it. I thought it was something, to be honest, obviously it wasn't particularly important. That's why you had Snoop Dogg out there. That's why you had Bubba Ray Dudley doing the refereeing, and he wasn't doing a particularly objective job of it, but who cares? Like, it was just a bit of fun to include six people on the show. In fact, eight people on the show, if you count Scarlett and B-Fab. They did some nice spots. They popped the crowd a number of times towards the end. I mean, as you say, old man, what more could you want?
Yeah.
So next up, we have Logan Paul shown warming up, and then highlights of night one's main event. Then we have a Paul Heyman interview by Caleb Braxton. Heyman says that bloodline rules means that whatever they want, no rules, no DQ, to one full conclusive finish. One man comes out as champ, the other man goes home to his wife Brandy. Tonight, Roman Reigns and bloodline rules. Now, Stephen, I wanted to address what you said a few weeks back about Paul Heyman being one of the most overrated performers of all the time.
Yes.
Because I think about it after I kind of was taken back by it, and your main criticism seemed to be about the way he kind of gazes at Roman and kind of his acting in terms of...
Well,
yeah, I'm sure. But, you know, just generally the way he acts in general, like his acting ability. For me, this is where he is one of the best in the world ever, is talking, and more so his ability to channel into things, to just little bits and pieces. He's very good at coming up with little word bits of wordplay and little bits of this, that and the other that he can just use as great sound bites that mean he doesn't have to say very much else. And just the tonight Roman Reigns and bloodline rules, I thought, was just a phenomenal piece of work at the end of this promo. I just loved it. But I kind of do take your point a little bit, because I've been watching Paul Heyman since and been like, oh yeah, it's a little bit hokey, some of the stuff he does in terms of his facial reactions to Roman Reigns and stuff. And when he's on the apron and he's kind of watching and all that stuff. But I love this promo.
Even his Hall of Fame speech, Paul Heyman is undoubtedly a very, very strong performer. But I suppose for me, it's a how much of his whole career has been, I don't know, it's difficult, isn't it? Because there's a, they're obviously all performers, but there's some bits of wrestling that are realer than others. But I feel like Cody may be a good example. I kind of believe Cody, but I'm not sure how much of Heyman I believe. And even in his Hall of Fame speech, I thought that kind of tailed off when he got to the ECW stuff. And I feel like sometimes, quite a lot of the time, he's playing something rather than, for me, something that's really believable from him. Who is Paul Heyman, really?
Yeah, I can definitely sympathize, especially with regards to the Hall of Fame speech. He starts out by saying, I've never had to do or say anything publicly as Paul Heyman, just the person. And then he was basically Paul Heyman, the performer, for the whole time. And I was like, hang on. This is no different than Paul Heyman, the performer. You are the same person. And I think this is more just a criticism you can level at him in more recent years. I strongly believe that when you go back to 2001, for example, when he's doing all his work during the invasion, like that, those promos are phenomenal in my view, and they come across as completely believable and completely legitimate. But I kind of do agree with you. There is that sense of where he, just a little bit. You're right. He feels like he's performing a lot of the time. But I think, as I say, where his strength is just he kind of dials into these little things. Like sometimes it's wordplay, sometimes it's popular things in culture that he manages to pull out of the moment. And even in his Hall of Fame speech, his ability to almost reinforce the idea that he will be around for a long time, I thought was remarkably clever, regardless of whether you thought it was a good performance or not. When he talked about working with the future and naming, I think he named Bron Breakker, Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams, who are all quite highly rated. Like, he is already associating himself with this next level of young, exciting talent that's expected to be main event level, to the point where, talk about kind of self-promotion and keeping yourself relevant. Like, already he's building into the story a reason why he might be around as a manager for the next 5 to 10 years with the next level of top line performers. Now, I'm not saying, again, I'm not particularly great performance, but just the mind to think, right, this is my Hall of Fame speech, I've got a great opportunity here, I can align, you know, almost already align myself with the next generation of talent. And it's that I think Paul Heyman's absolutely phenomenal at, is just dialing into what keeps him relevant constantly. And I don't think anyone's quite got the same talent at that as Paul Heyman.
Can't disagree with that.
I also think that to criticize his overacting when I'm a massive fan of Paul Bearer, it seems a bit double standards, really.
Fair enough. So then we have an advert for WWE 2K24, and then a Slim Jim advert with LA Knight, with Randy Savage also making an appearance from his old, I think it's WCW days, I think those adverts were from, I'm not sure. Then LA Knight arrives in a hideous Slim Jim car ahead of the next match. There's a hype video where AJ Styles prevents LA Knight from winning the Elimination Chamber. Styles then saying Knight doesn't belong in the same locker room, but thought he was funny until he got in his way of winning the WWE title. Knight then urging Styles to come out and humble him and challenges him to a match at WrestleMania. Styles attacking him, then LA Knight showing up at Styles' home, a brawl ensuing until cops show up and arrest Knight. Then there's some more shenanigans out on SmackDown with Knight disguised as a security guard. This is all ahead of LA Knight versus AJ Styles, a 12 and a half minute match, which ended when LA Knight hit his blunt force trauma after a decent exchange to win the match. Steven.
Now, while people will talk about many great moments over this WrestleMania weekend, I think the absolute peak came during, do you know where I'm going here, Sam?
I certainly do, long boy.
During LA Knight's entrance, when the Slim Jim Long Boy Gang fan section was shown in the crowd, and a guy in a lovely brown jacket walked directly into shot and then proceeded to pretend to aggressively fellate something right on camera. Absolutely magnificent. Magnificent. What was not so magnificent was AJ Styles' new music.
Oh yeah, fucking
which
hell.
Was bloody hell. I mean, what a shame. His old theme was great and one of the few positive things back from his kind of WWE glory days. Question for our loyal and huge fan base, our listeners: how do you look bigger and better at 46 than you did at 36 or 26? The answer is, with some delicious, delicious roids. And I suspect...
Are they delicious? Do you know, Stuart? Do they taste nice?
They taste so good as your muscles grow and your cock shrinks. And I suspect both AJ and Orton have got radioactive piss at this point. This match was exactly what I thought it would be. Not bad, not good, just fine, middling.
Oh, man.
So glad you mentioned the Long Boy Gang. I thought, to their credit, I thought the video for this, the pre-match hype video, was excellent, because this is such a bullshit nothing feud to basically get a guy who advertises Slim Jims onto a WrestleMania, effectively, because his star has fallen, I think, fairly rapidly, to be honest. My notes for this match are, apart from the Long Boy Gang pretending to suck off a Slim Jim, German suplex from the top by Knight, which I enjoyed. And then that's it. I've got pretty good effort from both. Nothing particularly groundbreaking, but enjoyable enough. And that pretty much sums it up. And to Stephen's point, I could have probably called that as soon as they rang the bell. So yeah, fine. But I feel like this actually is probably the point where they kind of slow it down a bit, the show. And they're kind of like, look, you've had the Amazing Open. You've had the Philadelphia Street Fight. You can fuck off for a little bit if you want. And these guys are going to roll around, and then you can come back for the good shit.
This outperformed what I expected it to. To be honest, and this was my concern about night two, was that the middle part of the show was going to be LA Knight, AJ Styles, Randy Orton, and I was a bit like, oh, I don't really care about any of them, to be honest, now, especially, you know, AJ Styles and Randy Orton are past it, let's be clear. And LA Knight, you know, I know a lot of people like him, but I've always felt like he's just a touch below the top level. He's not a top guy. He's just one of a number of guys in the upper mid card who are quite over, but are probably not going anywhere else. You know, they're probably not going any further. This, though, I actually thought was better than I imagined it would be. I liked what they did. I felt like it felt personal. I felt like it felt pretty fast-paced. I was really quite happy with this, to be honest, considering I had no interest going in. It kind of reached a level where I was like, okay, actually, I can live with that. That was a good little 10 or so minutes, and I'll take that all day long. So after the LA Knight AJ Styles match, that's hard to say, that is, all those letters involved. We have a WWEshop.com advert. Then we have a SmackDown and King and Queen of the Ring advert on back-to-back nights in May. Now, this is the advert that was referenced by Alex on last week's episode, where he was worried that this was their announcement for next year's WrestleMania host. He thought Saudi Arabia might be the host for next year's WrestleMania.
I think in the next 10 years,
yep,
it could possibly happen. I think what they need, what needs to happen for it to happen, is that Saudi Arabia becomes more of a tourist destination like Dubai or Abu Dhabi. And I think that is going to happen, because that's the next, you know, the next natural progression. So I could see it. Yeah, we'll perhaps that will be our big reunion. WrestleMania 50 in Riyadh will be the time we finally all in the same room together.
I think I'm going to avoid that. But I can definitely see it happening. Like, yeah, I said on last week's show, their experience thing is there, you know, the tourist attraction is in Saudi Arabia, so why wouldn't they do WrestleMania there?
By 2034, they'll have similar licensing laws to Dubai and Abu Dhabi, and you can get a beer in hotels and get a beer at events and stuff, and it will happen. I have no doubt, because you'll get a big flying crowd, they'll pay a shitload of money for them. But at the moment, it probably doesn't make economic sense when they already get that big money for Saudi Arabia, and they could do something, they can do the WrestleMania show elsewhere and make a huge amount of money with it. But yeah, it will come. Whether it happens before London is an interesting one, isn't it? I would probably bet yes.
I think it probably will, because I think WWE will probably feel like they can only get away with giving WrestleMania to a different time zone once in a very long period of time. Do you see what I mean? So it'd have to feel like a unique occasion, as opposed to, oh my god, two years out of three we've had to get up, like American audience, we've had to get up really early, or whatever it is that means that they have to do. Like, I think that they will want to spread that out a bit. So I'd be shocked if they both happened, put it that way. Then we've got the highlights of the 2024 Hall of Fame induction, which included the US Express, Bull Nakano, Thunderbolt Patterson, Muhammad Ali, Leah Maivia, and Paul Heyman. And then the Hall of Fame class are introduced to the live crowd. The show itself, the Hall of Fame show, I watched all the way through, actually. I did skip a few bits and pieces here and there, but I did watch pretty much all the speeches. It was a weird show this year, I thought. A really strange show.
I only watched the Heyman speech. I didn't see anything else. Is any of the rest of it worth sort of catching up with?
Not especially. Paul Nakano's speech was quite nice. I personally enjoyed her going in. I thought it was great to see her go in. But what was really strange is, like, first of all, the Muhammad Ali induction, like, The Rock did the speech, and then Muhammad Ali's wife came in, spoke for like very short period of time, and then they went back to The Rock. Like, she went to The Rock and started talking about The Rock and the fact that he was now the people's champion and gave him that title belt. So it's basically, rather than a Muhammad Ali induction, it was basically like a Rock induction again with this title. It was really weird. And then Thunderbolt Patterson talked for like 20 minutes, but not about wrestling. He had a guy with him. Nobody knows who the guy was. Talked about wrestling for about 3 minutes. And then Thunderbolt Patterson talked about religion and various other bits and pieces for an age. And it was really boring. And then The Rock came out at the end of it to induct Leah Maivia, obviously his grandmother. And he looked really pissed off, presumably because he had about 2 or 3 minutes to do it, because Thunderbolt Patterson had just spoken for ages. So he really rushed through what he was trying to say, managed to say the highlights and do, you know, give her his respect. But I'm pretty certain he looked pissed off, and I'm pretty certain they just run over, so he didn't have enough time to do what he wanted to do.
Because SmackDown didn't finish till 10, did it? And they one of my friends, Lewis, was there, and I think he left as Rock's mother came out, so he waited for that. But that they must have had a build. I reckon that building had a curfew of maybe 12 or 12:30, so that's probably what they were rushing for.
Wouldn't surprise me. And it was just a really odd one. As I say, the whole thing with The Rock getting presented a title was really odd. I was like, why is this happening during somebody's induction? I don't get it. And he was also being in character for bits and pieces of the whole night as well, which was really strange, because like they talk about, I remember the next day, like, a couple of the wrestlers were like, oh, you know, if you come to the Hall of Fame, please don't boo and cheer people like you would as if we're in story. But then The Rock was acting as if he was in story, and I was like, you can't have it both ways.
You've
got to pick a lane, and that was just really odd. Did you see it, old man?
I did not see any of it. I saw Paul Heyman point out his kids in the audience and then pull out a box of goods, which is from the highlight package. That was it. I don't have any interest in it at all. Did they still do the Warrior Award winner?
No. They've binned it.
Fuck for that.
Well, it was okay when they seemed to get to a point with it where they were like giving it to Tim White and people like that. And I was like, I'm all for that. That's fine. Yeah, give it to those people. But alas, it stopped. Then we get the WWE in the community video. Lovely stuff. The Miz Snickers advert. Then an advert for Bray Wyatt and the documentary Becoming Immortal, which we also had on night one. And then we have a hype video for Logan Paul and his success story. Orton and Owens making a pitch against him. Nick Aldis making a triple threat match at Mania for the US title. Not particularly detailed hype video, this one, but nevertheless, we got one anyway. Logan Paul then came out on top of a big prime truck for his entrance. Meanwhile, backstage, Zayn met Owen at the entrance, harking back to the night before, and Zayn tells him it's his turn now. Owen's wearing his KO Mania 7 t-shirt, then drives to the ring on a golf cart. And then as Orton comes out, Owens reverses back up the ramp and welcomes Orton to get on board, and the pair come to the ring together. Anything you want to pull out of any of that stuff before we go into the match?
In theory, I quite liked the cart stuff with Owens Norton, but then I was just like, what is this? Like, really? Like, you've got a guy who apparently, in Logan Paul, who has come in, shouldn't be here because he's not been doing it long enough, hasn't earned the respect. And then you've got two veterans dicking around on a golf cart before a match for a title. And I was a bit like, come on. Like, really?
I completely agree. I just thought, what makes you look more like a geek driving a golf cart or doing a hand gesture from a far more popular set of wrestlers that's from 25 years ago? Like, why is he doing crotch chops? So it just looks so stupid. I don't think he should be doing that or a stunner. So like, all that makes people think is, well, you're not as good as the original, so why are you doing that?
There was a lot of DX related stuff. And
yeah,
crotch
weird.
Chops in general. God. Like, Drew McIntyre did one. DIY came out as DX on night one. Again, I can only assume that this is all tied into the Paul Levesque era, but who knows. This match goes for 17 and a half minutes and is won after Orton hits an RKO to counter a pop-up powerbomb by Kevin Owens. But then Logan Paul throws Orton out of the ring and then hits Owens with a frog splash and gets the victory to retain the title. It should be mentioned that Logan Paul was with the Prime mascot during this match, and the Prime mascot turned out to be somebody called I Show Speed, but I had no clue who he was. Apparently he's a YouTuber of some kind. Oh man.
Well, I mean, to be honest, who gives a fuck? Like, I just didn't care going into this. This got talked about in the preview show as well. Didn't understand why Orton's in there. Don't understand. Like, there's a natural story for Owens and Logan Paul. The psychology's way off. Two faces versus one heel didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. That being said, I thought that they maneuvered that part of it very well, where Orton and Owens were kind of like ganging up on Logan Paul, and then I think Orton goes for a cover, Owens drags him off, we said pulls him off then, but that's another video. and then they're like, well, we're gonna do it, should we just do it? And then they start fighting, and I thought, all right, cool, you've done that. And I think they managed to get a decent little match out of it. To be fair, I didn't think it was absolutely brilliant. It's never going to be a triple threat, especially with two of the three guys in it. It's never going to reach a massive level for me. I liked iShow Steve or Steve, whatever his name was, because he pulls the off and I'm like, who is that? No idea. And he gets right in Orton's face and Orton absolutely fucking kills him. He RKOs him on the table and he hits him hard as well, and I appreciate that. And then I actually really liked the finish, the end sequence, and the splash by Logan Paul is extraordinary. Like, he's so high and he does the little arms and legs together and then splashes them back out. Absolutely cracking stuff. And it was just like, it was a three-way match and it followed the same path that most three-way matches do. Just in the initial part, instead of two heels on a face, it was two faces on a heel, and then they did some stuff and it was all right, and it was kind of enough for me. It was about as good as I think it could have been.
I watched this back on Tuesday evening after WrestleMania. I must be honest, I had a huge bout of tiredness hit me during this, the point I wanted to save Bayley and Io. The rewatch to another day, and I think I was probably a bit lower on this than it deserved. I thought the crowd were pretty into it, and there were some very good near falls. As you said, Sam, I loved Randy Orton brutalizing this sweary YouTuber. He just hated this guy in the prime bottle so much, ragged him around, brutal front kick. I guess at least he didn't shit in his bag, but perhaps he actually did after the hatred that was radiating from Randy's body. And my final thought on this is, can we get Logan Paul in next year's G1? Or should I say Continental Classic? Because this guy is so good and I want to see him wrestling more. But yeah, this was fine.
As I said before, Logan Paul is only the wrestler that Hangman Page wishes he could be.
Oh my God, yes. Yeah.
I like this. I thought this was a really decent match. Again, my expectations were so low that when I watched it, I was like, this is really fun. This is really enjoyable. And interesting, I think, that Logan Paul got the victory. I mean, I kind of thought he would, but at the same time, when you think about it, he's just won a match where it's almost handicap match against Owens and Orton here, and he comes out on top. It feels like, dare I say, that WWE still see him as a guy that, regardless of how regularly he wrestles, could still be a top line guy, like a main event act in the company, because you would have thought that they would be like, well, Logan Paul's title reign can't be very long because he's not going to be around very often. But clearly they don't seem to care about that. And they obviously feel like Paul's got something that long term they can really use in bigger matches. I don't know, but it feels that way. Maybe a Cody Rhodes Logan Paul title match is not far up from the future.
I'd love that. And Joe, what we're talking earlier on about having trust in WWE, something I'm really looking forward to is going back to an era where we're getting title defenses. So Cody can, and whether they might do some rematches or whatever, but I'm like, whoever it is, that's good. Like, that's the old way it used to be. Like, you'd be, I think it'll be AJ Styles potentially in the one in front. That's okay. That's not going to be amazing. But then you do the next one. I just think that's how a pay-per-view or PLE should end, with the world champion defending the title. And you can, I think that's the way you build up a nice run, even if it's 7 or 8 months with some defenses against people. And that's the bit where over the few weeks, everyone was talking about kind of this historic Roman Reigns title run, which obviously contributed, helped business with the storyline he was in. But in terms of pure title defenses, there weren't that many. So I think that's what I want to see from this run with Cody. And as you said, Ben, I've got the trust also that the company's going to deliver that.
I'm not overly keen on that as you, to be perfectly honest. I love the fact that it was a rare thing for the title to be defended. But I think if they do, I'm happy with it. But just don't give us what you gave us with Seth Rollins last year, which was 3 or 4 title shots against Finn Balor. You've got to be like, it's got to be a case of one title shot, move on to someone else. Like, because otherwise it just gets so boring and so predictable. And WWE have done this to death. For about 10 years, that's what they did. was three matches in a row every single time. We desperately need to stay away from that. I have faith that they're not going to go in that direction. I feel like they've got enough different people in the mix that, you know, Cody's got potential title defenses against a number of different people. So as long as they do that, I'll be happy with it. But I will worry if you get 3 months of Cody Rhodes versus AJ Styles.
Mm.
Then there was an advert for Those About to Die, a TV show. Don't know anything about that. Anybody know anything about that?
Starring Vince McMahon.
Okay. Then there was the advert for the MLB title belts, which on screen I thought looked very nice, in particular the Seattle Mariners one, which I was most interested in. And then I've just looked at a picture of it online and it is fucking hideous. It really is. It just looks awful. What I do quite like is that all these title belts are different shapes. They're all different. They're all slightly different shapes. Like the Yankees one looks like the US title from the 2000s. Is that shape? It doesn't look like it, but it's got the same shape as that. And then you've got like the Seattle Mariners one is more of the shape of a world title kind of belt. So they've got different shapes and stuff to them. But yeah, it just looks awful. The LA Dodgers one, interestingly, looks like the old Intercontinental title, at least in shape form. Anyway,
I got a question. Who the fuck's buying them?
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea.
So strange. I mean, there's obviously a market, and I'd imagine they're quite cheap to produce as well. So fair play to them. But imagine just turning up at an event, you know, like, oh, do you like my Minnesota Twins championship belt there? It is part of the legacy range. You're correct.
Well, maybe they're like, yeah, maybe the people who go day to day on a kind of to the baseball will be like, yeah, I'll get one. Don't know. Then we get the hype video for Bayley and Damage Control. It starts off with Damage Control winning the tag team titles and then the Money in the Bank and the women's title. Bayley becoming an outcast within the group after Asuka and Kairi Sane join. Bayley winning the Rumble, then the others turning on her. And Bayley saying that she did everything to make Damage Control and now she'll do everything to break them. She is then carried into the arena by Egyptian warriors for her entrance. I'm not really sure I understood the appropriateness of that particular entrance, but fine, whatever you want. And then Bayley and Io Sky went for 14 and a half minutes. And this one ended when Bayley hit a rose plant and got the pin. I hadn't seen this move before, which shows how little attention I've been paying the women's division in WWE in general. But that was the first time I've seen Bayley do that. I'm sure she's been doing it for years. I haven't noticed it before. Stephen, what did you think of this?
When I tweeted about really wanting Bayley to come out to our old classic theme tune, I was told apparently she says you'd never do that again. But I still longed on the edge of my seat for those famous old bars to kick in. Masada was terribly disappointed. And it may not, I don't really care if it fit today's character or not. It would have blown the roof off Lincoln Financial Field if in fact it did have a roof. These two were in a tough spot in the last match before the kind of highly anticipated multi-year story leading to the main event. But I thought, and as a result, I thought the crowd were a little bit quiet in the early going, but they did pick up as it went along, and they were very much with it, loud and invested by the end. I had the customary WWE Network freeze and switch to German commentary when I restarted, working on the basis that all of the pay-per-views, hopefully all of the pay-per-views in the back catalogue move over to Netflix on day one, then I really cannot wait for January the 1st, 2025, because it's clear that WWE have spent no money in investment on this shitty turd of a streamer anymore, and it's just dying on its arse and a pain for all of us. During the match, Io hit a couple of really dangerous-looking German suplexes, the second with a bridge and a pin, and after it was broken up, you could see Bayley talking to her, and I presume she was saying, I'd really prefer it if you didn't break my neck of this match tonight, my old pal. Io's reverse of a belly-to-belly and a pin was in the same category as a wet Alex walking out of the sea, a thing of pure, unadulterated beauty, as was the rose plant reverse later on. And yeah, this got rather good at the end. This would be smack bang in the old pro wrestling moments recommend category, and it exceeded my expectations for sure.
Yeah, I agree entirely with that. I thought this built really, really nice, and it was very good come the end. And I think Io Sky, we're going to look back on Io Sky in like 5 or 6 years, she'll have left or whatever, and we'll look back and we'll be like, gosh, she was bloody good actually, wasn't she? In the same way we will with Asuka as well. I feel like they're never going to be appreciated until they leave, because I think she's absolutely cracking. She is very different to anything else that they have in terms of her style. Agree with you entirely on the German suplexes, Stephen. The second one that you mentioned with the bridge almost made me prolapse. It was so terrifying. Like, it would have killed me 100%. And I just thought it was really, really good towards the end. I thought the last 3 or 4 minutes were really excellent. And the reversal from the Rose Plant attempt was incredible. I still don't really know how Sky did it. I'd never seen the move either, Ben. Never seen it. Okay. So I was very impressed with it. Yeah, glad it's not just a belly-to-belly now, because it always felt a bit weak. But this was also, I thought, so the crowd were firmly with Bayley, very, very much with her. Obviously made a deal out of it on both nights. There was her first singles match at WrestleMania, and I kind of liked the fact that she won this, and for me, watching it, I was a little bit like, oh, is this the happy ending? Are we going to not get what we want from the main event? Good stuff. Liked it.
I see what you mean. Yeah, in terms of Io Sky, I should say, she was, of course, called Io Shirai before. And Io Shirai is currently on the top 100 wrestlers of all time list, just outside the top 100, in 115th. But that is higher than any other WWE women's wrestler of all time.
Wow.
In there. So she's already, I mean, most of those points, in fact, the vast, vast majority come from her time in Japan as opposed to WWE. But she is already pretty well respected as an absolutely quality pro wrestler. I was a little bit down on this, to be honest. I didn't mind it. I thought it was above average, but I just was expecting a little bit more, and I was expecting to care more. And I think, like you, Stephen, it was partially due to the disappointment of not getting the old Bayley theme and the wacky waving inflatable tube men. Like, I just felt like, let's just go all in. I'd said it in the preview. Let's just go all in for this. You know, we want the full-on Bayley babyface. Interesting that she said she'd never do it again. And actually, I did reflect afterwards on the choice and thought, well, maybe it was the right thing because they wanted to do something quite serious here. And presumably Bayley's got a vision for what she wants for this particular phase of her career now as a babyface champion. And maybe reason she doesn't want to go back to it is maybe because she was perhaps a little bit, I guess she was kind of cast aside by fans when she brought it to the main roster originally. I felt like she got quite a lot of negativity towards her as a consequence of the fact that it was quite a young person's gimmick, if you see what I mean. Like it was a gimmick for young females, I think, as opposed to like your 30-year-old males. Being cynical, I think that's probably what
all I can say, Ben, is I enjoyed that gimmick a lot.
I did too. But I felt like there were a lot of people, and I don't mean to be nasty, but a bit like Matt, who probably were like, oh, this is shit, this is just for kids.
Do you know what, though? They botched her booking as well, didn't they? Which is a really important part of the story as well. They didn't give her the win at WrestleMania. They gave it on Raw. So it's like, it was bizarre. But that, again, that's 2017.
But it was also too quick as well. It was too quick. She'd only come onto the main roster like 6 months before. Yeah. Go back to NXT, and that Bayley story was a good 2 years in the making. Like, that was how you do it, because she was not supposed to be this kind of dominant wrestler who would come in and get the instant victory. She was always going to take a long time to get there because she was the underdog. So when she did get there, it felt like really important and really emotional. So again, that was the other thing. She was booked badly, but I just think there was a lot of people who just turned on her because she had this kind of family-friendly gimmick, should we call it.
Which would probably work great now, wouldn't it? If she came in now.
Well, I think certainly. Yeah. Yeah, and I also think, to be honest, had she come out with that music, it would have, again, you say, blown the roof off. But wasn't to be, unfortunately. But yeah, I just found that at the start there was a little bit of hesitancy that crept into their game, and it just felt a little bit awkward at first. This has got, by the way, tremendous ratings on Cage Match, like 8.47 average rating.
Wow.
So it's done really well. I just didn't see it anywhere close to that, to be honest. I was a little bit, you know, lower on this than I were the previous two matches. And I thought the previous two matches were pretty, pretty good. So, yeah, I was a bit disappointed by this one. We then got an advert for WWE Live, 25 new dates apparently added over the course of the summer. And then an advert for Backlash France on May the 4th, which is the next premium live event. So there are two PLEs in May, neither in America. Then we had Michael Shea shown in the crowd. I don't know who he is, but thought I'd mention it. Also Warren Treaty from earlier on, George Kittle again, and T-Pain, and Vanessa Hudgens, and Lily Singh, who I don't know who that is either. lots of people I didn't really know who they were, to be perfectly honest.
If you want a family-friendly movie to watch with children and partner, I highly recommend the Vanessa Hudgens Christmas films. I think the first one's called Princess Switch. Phenomenal, phenomenal pieces of work for all the family.
There you go then. In about 8 months' time, chuck it in your DVD player or your or on Netflix for those who are more, you know, technically and technologically savvy, and enjoy. Then we had Snoop Dogg and the Philadelphia Eagles cheerleaders in the ring to announce 72,755 in attendance, which made for a two-night total of 145,298. So that is that's the lot. That's the whole show. Obviously, what comes next is the long build to Cody and The Rock. And sorry, Cody and Roman. God, there you go. There's a Freudian slip. Maybe it should have been Cody and The Rock, but Cody and Roman and all the brilliance that we talked about at the beginning of the show. And, you know, it's worth just remembering just how good that final match really was.
Also, something to spot in here. I did, Alex, if you're listening, I've listened to the first 3 minutes of your Shawn Michaels show where you blaspheme the greatest wrestler of all time. Now, interestingly, in this video package for Cody, the best wrestler to ever appear at WrestleMania was shown on screen. And you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, I don't think Bret Hart was in that video, mate.
No, Kenny Omega was in the video. And that, again, what a phenomenal touch that there was a little photo of him, Jericho and Cody at the Tokyo Dome, presumably to kind of allude to the start of AEW. But you're never getting that with Vince. And that was like, that's why this was, from whatever the last bit to that video package all the way through to the end, this is why it was such a tremendous piece of work. It really, really was.
Did they have the Young Bucks in a picture?
I think they did, but I didn't spot the Young Bucks. Yeah, I didn't spot the Young Bucks.
I'll be honest, I thought that was a fuck you to AEW a little bit.
That's all right, though. That's fine.
Was like, it's like that you started this pissant company with his pals and then he outgrew it. So he came home to WWE.
Yeah, I think they were probably a bit more measured, I thought. But that is ultimately what happened, isn't it? That Cody was a star at a certain level, hit the glass ceiling there, and then came back and has been one of the best baby faces that we've ever seen now. And that's not, I don't think that's over exaggeration. That's a reality.
So a couple of additional things to talk about here. First of all, interestingly, that Roman Reigns has now headlined more WrestleManias than anybody. That is, if you count the WrestleMania Night 1 as a WrestleMania main event. But effectively, in the WrestleMania Night 2 here, he broke Hogan's record of 8 WrestleMania main events to be 9 main events, which is mad that Roman Reigns is now the record holder in that regard. Second thing to ask really is, you talked about that glass ceiling in AEW and Cody Rhodes kind of hitting it. Partially that was because he got the beginning of go away heat as a babyface. Are we set to see that with him now?
I think with this crowd, they've got some time. I think this crowd is into the product. WWE is a babyface promotion now, ever since the first Triple H takeover, in the sense that people want it to be good now. So I think people will go with Cody for a long time. But it wouldn't surprise me if in a couple of years' time, we do get a Cody heel run. But I think the people are with him for... I mean, ultimately, even if you look at stuff in back in the 99 before Austin went away, there'd be some crowds that would be more for The Rock than Austin when they had their interactions leading to that Survivor Series match. So you will get a bit of that, but I think he's okay for now, for sure.
I mean, just on that point though, The Rock was a babyface and also the other biggest star in the industry at the time. There's no one similar to that now, so maybe Cody wouldn't have that same issue. Old man?
Well, I can see it happening. I think it'll take a while because the way that Cody was selling his emotions walking down to the ring for this main event was so extraordinarily perfect in terms of like, I'm fucking scared, but I want to do it for everyone. I also think he is a lovely man and I think that will really work for him. And I know that sounds stupid, but Hogan's a fucking cunt. And I think people got wind of that because he trampled on a couple of people. And Austin was never the sympathetic babyface. He was never that. People loved him for quite the opposite, in that he did whatever he wanted against people. People went off of Cena, I think, because Cena was fucking making basically everyone do the job at one point and doing a really, really bad job of elevating people to his level. And I think Cody has the benefit of being able to work with some people that aren't probably of that main event level, and by association really elevating them. It's why I think the stuff with Roman Reigns, he never fully went where the crowd fully turned full circle on him and made him a face, because he could do those things where he would give the shine to a baby face so well by being such a good heel. And I think Cody's got the flip of that.
I think he should be okay, but they've got to be a little bit careful. So he did this effectively the same promo on Raw and SmackDown in the week after WrestleMania. It was almost exactly word for word the same thing. And in both of them, his sort of almost like he's got a cadence of talking, which is almost a little bit knowing, you know, when he does the, so what do you want to talk about? That is this sort of knowing, like, you know, I'm going to say this kind of thing. So, but I'm going to do it in a slightly different way this time than I did it the last time. And there's a knowing look in his eye as he does it. And I think as a baby face underneath going for the title, that can be quite fun, because there's a sense of and making quite popular, because there's a sense of, you know I lost the last time, but here we go again kind of thing. But doing it now as the champion, I think it's going to come across a little bit smarmy, and I did find it a little bit smarmy on SmackDown, to be honest. So I just think they got to be careful. I get it, this was this sort of tour of the shows to go, look, you know, I won, I'm the champion, this is all great. Raw on Monday is due to do, like tonight in fact as we record this, but this will come out afterwards. I'm hoping what his promo is a completely shift in focus now away from WrestleMania. That's done, we've done our celebration, now it's on to what comes next for Cody. Is it going to be AJ Styles? Is it going to be LA Knight? They've got to face each other on SmackDown, I think it is this week, to determine who will face him for the title at Backlash France. And they've got to kind of go in that direction now. They've kind of got to get away from the victory tour, because that will get very thin very quickly, I think.
The only problem this week is he can't sink his teeth into that feud, quote unquote, because he doesn't know who he is. He's not on SmackDown because he's in the UK on Friday. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know what he'll do on Raw. I don't know. I'd be inclined to set up a little TV feud in between, get someone.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, something like that. You know, it doesn't have to be a big.
Or
big
at the very
star,
least,
but
just have someone come out on Raw and then them have a match on Raw with person, just
that'd
to kind
good.
Of give them something else to do. I just think he needs to not be on the coming out in front of the crowd, not really having much to say thing. That would be a mistake, because then you start to overexpose him and people start to, the backlash starts to come.
No pun intended.
Well, maybe it was. Who knows?
I was just going to add something very, very quickly. Cody in 2018, if anyone's not familiar with his work as a heel during the run when he was feuding with Kenny and the kind of Bullet Club split, if you can stomach seeing the odd Joey Ryan skit and various other people on Being the Elite, then I would highly recommend around one of the episodes is Bullet Club is fine, and Cody's away with Brandy like skiing and stuff, and Cody as a heel is incredible work in that stuff. So if you want to sample some of that, I would highly recommend that you go back and have a look at that.
So it is now time for us to give our overall thoughts and our score out of 10 for WrestleMania XL Night 2. Seeing as Stephen has just gone out of shot of the camera, I think I'll start with you, old man. Stephen made the choice for me.
No, sorry, yeah. I was getting a bit of a cat bowl with some food, so my fat cat isn't stealing from my skinny cat, so it's now under my control.
That's lovely. Top cat work.
And not only that, but Stephen seems to have a microcosm of society going on in his house with his cats.
Yes. So, a couple of quick notes. The live performance of Roman Reigns' music was sensational. Absolutely brilliant. Roman Reigns also saying in the main event, a 3, as in 3 count, not just the number, feels like a $3 million bonus. I enjoyed that aspect of it as well. Yeah, those are things I completely forgot to mention. This is a bloody good night for WWE, I think. I think for me as well, I think this is a bloody good night at the end of a good weekend, like a really solid weekend. There aren't really any bum notes for me on this show. There's stuff that I could take or leave. There's stuff that I don't really feel like I necessarily need, like the triple threat. Like I said, I don't think it needs to be a triple threat. But then you look at the card, there's a lot of single stuff going on. So actually, maybe in the grand scheme of things, it did make a bit of sense for the flow of this show. But I thought this was cracking. I had a very, very good time watching it. And I am going to give this a 9 out of 10. Because if we did decimals, it would be higher. But I feel like that main event on any card would elevate it to at least an 8. Because I think it's probably one of the greatest things they've ever done. Adding in the start of the show as well. Fuck off. Fucking call it off, kids. Crap off the rest of WrestleManias, because they ain't going to top it. They ain't going to top this main event, and I don't think they can ever start a show as well as they start this night of WrestleMania. So yeah, that's it. I retire.
Wow, this is a really difficult show to rate in a traditional way, because the end of it was so fantastic that I was tempted to give it all 10. Oof. And I'm kind of thinking, which for the record, I've only given to the film No Holds Barred so far on this podcast. So, you know, that is lofty ambition to get back to that place. I mean, really, the only things on this show that were average or not for me were the Street Fighter and maybe Knight versus Styles. The US title match is probably better than my tired eyes gave it credit for. Opening was really good, as we said. And the Women's World title was strong for me as well. So where does that leave us? Was the finale so wonderful that it made anything else on the show that wasn't all that good kind of meaningless? And was this the perfect wrestling show? We've talked about, does that exist before? And I started to type yesterday, and I was exactly going to the place you were, Sam. I was thinking, if this was, if we did half marks, I would settle on 9.5. But then I kind of stopped in my tracks and thought about what I was saying. And if a piece of performance art, it's all about the climax and the end of the story, and that it hits as hard and at such a deep emotional level as this did, then how can I really moan about a couple of throwaway TV style matches earlier in the night that were inoffensive? So for WrestleMania 40 night 2, my rating out of 10 is 10. This Whoa. Was the perfect wrestling show.
Love it. Very bold and big on that. That is pretty massive.
So just before you do your roundup, Tinky, mm-hmm. I'm changing mine to a 10 as well, because when Stephen was talking then, and this would have happened if Stephen had gone first as well, I was running through this card and I was like, if I watch this show again, I watch this show because it is so perfectly put together from the start to then even the street fight, to then the kind of throwaway with LA Knight and AJ Styles, to then the triple threat, to then, for me, a really very, very good women's match in the semi-final spot, which is a wonderful position to be in, where no one even bats an eyelid. It's like, oh yeah, of course they are. Of course they're sub-main event of what is now the biggest WrestleMania of all time. And then you've got the main event. And like Steven said, it's all about the story. It's all about the finale. And the main event is fucking perfection. So how can we not go 10?
Interesting. Well, the only way that this would not now be the best show we've ever watched in terms of our average rating is if I was to give this a 7 or lower. I'm giving it a 9, not a 10, but it is a great, great show. I think there's 6 matches on the show, 7 if you count the Money in the Bank cash in, but let's not count that. There's 6 matches on the show. If match 4 had been an 8 out of 10, I would have given this a 10 out of 10 myself, because I think the opener is sensational. And the Money in the Bank cash-in is perfect. It's reinvigorated my enthusiasm for Money in the Bank. That's how good it was. And I've long since been past Money in the Bank. But this was great. This was great. I just love this cash-in. I just thought it was sensational. And then the main event is sensational. And I said, I think it was either last week or at some point in the last few weeks, that I am past caring about match quality in and of itself. I'm completely over it. I just don't care. It doesn't mean anything to me. But you ally it to great storytelling, and I'm all there, right in there. That's all I want, is just great stories. I'd rather have a great story than a great match, put it that way. That's how I feel about this now, which is why, you know, for me, the Money in the Bank cash-in, obviously it wasn't a great match, but the story there was so well done. It was so well told. It was great. It was all the character development, all the, you know, really digging into who Drew is now and the level of bitterness he has towards CM Punk, and the fact that it blew up in his face is only going to make him more bitter. I loved that so much. And the main event, absolutely cracking. And again, the character work, the right down to the fact that Roman Reigns lost the match simply because he was angry with Seth Rollins from 10 years ago. That is what I want to watch when I watch pro wrestling, is those kinds of long, you know, stories with long tails, really long tails, right the way back to a an age where both characters were in a different place, but it still comes back to that one thing. The middle of the show, the four matches in between those two were all good to decent. None, I didn't think any of them were bad. I just don't think any of them were particularly great either. And if one of them had kind of risen to very, very, you know, very good, like an 8 out of 10 kind of level match, I would have given this a 10 out of 10, but it just missed out because of that. And obviously we don't do half ratings, because I imagine if that had been the case, I would have given this a 9.5 out of 10 as a show. A cracking show. And it is the best show now in our ranking of all time. 9.67. It makes it a 0.67 rating better than WrestleMania 17. In our view, it is the best night of WrestleMania in history. Not according to Cage Match, that only currently has a 9.03 rating compared to WrestleMania 17's 9.59. But obviously it doesn't matter now because we've decided it's higher. So different. And that, I say with both a big sigh of relief and a slightly heavy heart, is the end of the WrestleMania series. As I say, at least for a year anyway. We have done it. We've watched every single night of WrestleMania, covered every single one. All 45 nights of WrestleMania that there have been so far in history have been covered in depth and in our archives. You can listen to them all. We've got the whole thing anywhere you listen to your podcasts. So all that's left for me to do right now is to thank my two co-hosts today. First of all, Stephen Coriander, thank you for your contributions.
We saved the best till last, and I'm not just talking about WrestleMania, I'm obviously talking about your co-host tonight as well, Ben. So what a journey it's been, and the story is finished
for now. And old man, thank you as well for joining us today.
Well, just before I say goodbye, I was having a little think about this. And I was like, so we've done, can't remember how many actual shows it is, but 40 WrestleManias. I was thinking, like, if I had to give an MVP of all of the WrestleManias that we've covered, who would it be? And I was like, you know what it is, don't you? It's Dudley Tinkey. He's the one person, and listeners will know this, he's the one person who has not only hosted every WrestleMania episode, he has edited most of them. I believe Alex might have done one or two, or he might have just done some bonus episodes. And he's here every other fucking week for us. And he does all the work.
Fair
as
play
well.
To Ben, yeah.
Yeah, so there's that. But fuck him, because you know what you've got to do. You've got to rate, you've got to review, and you've got to remember Ben Spindler. Sorry, Ken Patera. That's it, Ken Patera.
Yeah, you can't stop doing the Ken Patera thing. That gave me some good content on Twitter today. And I thought it was an incredibly underrated tweet, because somebody had written out like a tweet about, oh, who's a great WWE star from the past that only true fans will remember? And I wrote Ken Patera, obviously. And I was like, that's brilliant. But I don't really feel like it got the full respect I felt it deserved as a tweet. But anyway, there we go. Yes, thank you very much for both of you. And thanks for everybody for listening. We'll be back again very soon with more bonus episodes, and then the new series, which we will give you some details on in a couple of weeks' time when we do one of our special episodes. But until then, take care.